Hey everyone, it's Phyllis here. Can you just let me know that you can hear me online? So tonight we've actually got somebody who I just met on the weekend, and listening to him for 2 days in a seminar that I attended actually got me thinking about how much you guys would benefit from hearing from him rather than just me doing a whole mindset call tonight on, you know, the things that I'm interested in. A couple of things that Mike, and I'll get him to introduce himself when he comes on. He'll let us know when he's there. Hopefully he's not struggling to get on. Emily, if he rings you, can you let me know? A couple of things I picked up from with Mike, because it was in an NLP course, and I don't know if any of you know what NLP is, and some of you will and some of you won't, but it's about neuro-linguistic programming, and it's about the connection between what we say, I suppose, in language and what we, what we hear with our brain. So understanding messages. And an interesting thing that kept coming up for me today, I received, of course, the weights emails today, and some people had already decided in advance of some events that they were going to have a hard time. So somebody said to me that, in so many months' time it was going to be difficult for them, and this is what we're going to talk about with Mike, because it's interesting that you can decide what something's going to be before you even get to it and experience it. And if you say it's going to be difficult, or if you say it's going to be hard, then it's most likely it will be, because you've already pre-decided it. So we're going to talk about that, the language that we use to talk to ourselves. And then the other thing that Mike brought up briefly, and we're going to explore tonight, is he talked about, you know, when you make that decision that you are going to get up and start training in the morning, you're going to get up early, and you've got, you know, all this, commitment to do it. And then in the morning you will wake up and your other personality says stay in bed. And what happens is you go into conflict because you make one right and one wrong. So, the one that wants you to get up and get out there and get moving because it's good for you, as opposed to the one who wants you to stay in bed because you need the rest. So it's going to be interesting to have a chat with Mike. We're going to talk about the thing about, you know, what we think actually becomes true. So when you are thinking about, you know, if you're going to be successful with this or you're going to fail at it, which is, you know, a word that some people use, the thing is, whatever you decide your mind up to be will actually probably eventuate. I mean, you can't succeed if you've already decided in your mind that you're not going to succeed. So dying for Mike to get on, because I actually saved all this for a chat with him. But anyway, so you're about as successful as you do make your mind up. Just having to check, his line is busy. Okay, he must be calling in. Hopefully, Mike, you're there.
I'm here, yep.
He's obviously working on. Oh, yeah. I'm trying not to answer any questions because I'm saving them up for you.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm here now.
Yeah, so everybody, this is like, and how do I pronounce your name? Is it Catton, your last name?
Catton, yes.
Catton. So, Mike, I thought it would be quite good if you'd like to introduce yourself, because there is actually quite a number of things that you have done and are doing. And then I've got a number of questions that we could just get straight into. I've also told the Christchurch people that there's an offer of a group session courtesy of you next week, and we'll be sending it out in the news on Friday, and that you're also looking at working on something so that you can offer something to people who aren't in Christchurch, because I know at the end of it there'll be some emails asking how can we talk more with Mike or find out more. So if you want to just Mike, talk a little bit about yourself. There's a few people going, yeah, that you're online now, so that's great.
Cool. So basically, I'm Mike. I started off as a chartered aircraft engineer. I emigrated to New Zealand as a country of choice for the outdoor lifestyle in 2006. And on arrival, I set up a company called Get Me Fit, which was all about helping people shift from whatever fitness state they were in and get them inspired and to taking a sort of an exercise regime and the way that they would eat. And in order to facilitate that journey for people, I quickly used the tools of NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, and basically looks at the science of the mind to help people make those shifts that otherwise would take, say, months or years even to make those changes from one lifestyle choice to another.
Great. So, Mike, the interesting thing is that I know that a lot of people send me messages that, you know, they're struggling with, they might be struggling with their personal trainer, it'll be about the depth of their knowledge and information with the person that they're working with. And that's what I found interesting on the weekend listening to you, is that you are using techniques of the mind to actually, you know, support people in their fitness efforts. So, and there was a couple of things that came up on the weekend for me that I thought would be really relevant. And one was about how people have already decided whether they're going to be successful or fail or not. So, you know, a lot to do with, you know, your thoughts become action, you know, become actions or become things. What did you think about? And the other thing I found really interesting was when you talked about the two personalities, so the one that's decided they're going to get up tomorrow and they're going to start exercising, and then they wake up in the morning and the other personality says, no, just relax and stay in bed. So if we could maybe touch on those, and then I'll start on the questions because I'm sure they'll just come flooding in after that.
Okay, cool. So often when people are exercising, they or desire to exercise, they may in a conscious mind say, yeah, I need to exercise, and they know consciously that's what they want to do. But when it actually comes to getting up in the morning to exercise or the specified time, they fail to take the action they thought they were going to do. And that's not necessarily wrong, it's just that it's not productive. So they put all the effort into buying the gym equipment or buying the gym pass or whatever, but then don't actually use it. And we'd call this sequential incongruity, in that they decide one thing but then do another, and then re-decide to do it and then fail to do it again. And when we look at this, the part of them which wants to exercise is obviously has got the intention to be fit and healthy. And then there's a part of them that wants to stay in bed or not to exercise. And we often demonize that part and say that bit's at fault. But when we do that, we're actually alienating a part of our mind. And that part therefore resists the exercise even more. The more that we try to overcome it, the more that it resists. And what's required is to accept that part of ourselves and find out what it's actually trying to do for us, because it may have a very logical thing that it wants to do for us. And when we identify what that is and find some way to meet that need, then we can actually solve the challenge and actually have both parts committed to the exercise.
Great. So what sort of strategies would people do? I know that would be an in-depth session, but what would be something that somebody could take away from, you know, today about that?
Okay, so say, for example, you wanted to exercise at 6 in the morning and you decided that you're going to get up and run, and there's a part of you that doesn't want to exercise. Well, when you have a, say, for example, if you were meeting just going by yourself, it's easy to let yourself down. But if you were meeting somebody else and you'd have prearranged that, like a training buddy, when we have that, to let somebody else down is a much bigger call. And therefore, we're more likely to overcome that part of us which doesn't want to exercise, because we're more likely to satisfy our friend by being there. So it's a very simple technique that just arranging to meet somebody else is on a one-on-one basis is far more likely to achieve success.
Okay, so can you just repeat that again, Mike, because I've just had someone say they're not 100% sure what that was. I mean, from my point of view, from what I was hearing here, is that if you've only got yourself to be accountable and to answer to, i.e. I'm going to get up at 6 and exercise, but if I've set up to have a training partner and I know that they're waiting in a park by themselves at 6 in the morning, I'm more likely to get up and do it because I don't want to let them down. So finding finding other ways to make yourself accountable and do it. Yeah?
Correct. That would be the right answer there, that you being accountable to somebody else helps you get there. But in terms of your own desire to be there, it's about having that inner identity that says, I'm an exerciser. Because an exerciser, somebody has that identity at heart, will overcome any challenge. Just as a smoker will almost come over any challenge to find their cigarettes when they run out, an exerciser will overcome any challenge to find a way to exercise. And it's creating that identity within yourself that, most people think they're a non-exerciser trying to exercise and therefore they have a motivational challenge.
And I really get that. So that's when I was saying to you on the weekend that a lot of people will say fake it till you make it, and then you've got this message in your brain telling you you're a fake. But if you act as if, then you just are. If you are a runner and you start running, you are a runner.
Absolutely. So it's having an identity within you.
Yeah, so someone said, so how do I get that self-motivation, or how do I get that inner, I am an exerciser? How do I, you know, establish that identity?
The main thing to identifying the identity is to think of yourself, and now Tony Robbins would say to use an incantation, whereby you'd when you rise in the morning, you'd say an incantation such as I'm an exerciser, so that you are ingraining that every day that you're creating that identity. But for some people, mm-hmm. they still have that inner voice which goes, but I'm not. And it's overcoming that voice to actually going out there and enjoying the exercise. And it might be that initially when you're exercising, you're just going for a walk, but that's still exercising. And it's and it can be enjoyable. Whatever you need to do to make it enjoyable so that you can actually get there and believe when you say, I'm an exerciser, even if it's only a gentle walk. And over the time period, that might become a jog, a run, a weight training session over time.
So one of the key factors is actually to you know, have it so that it is an enjoyment, so you actually are wanting to get out and do it.
Absolutely, because nobody wants to be forced to do something they don't like. A lot of people go to a gym for the first time, and they're a novice exerciser, and they're met by a gym bunny that loves to exercise. And so the gym bunny shows the new person this a great strength routine, which probably works a treat. But unfortunately, they haven't spoken to the new person enough to know that the thought of lifting a weight just puts them off, and they'd rather be swimming in the pool. So it's identifying something that you actually like to do and progressively move forward from there.
And I think that actually is quite a frequent occurrence in gyms. People go in and they haven't been into a gym for a number of years, not feeling particularly comfortable in their skin anyway, and then they get somebody who just absolutely does not see or understand how they're feeling and what their needs are, and then just rips out a program and says, go do this. So, and then they wonder where the person's disappeared to.
Absolutely. If they ever check up.
Say again?
If the trainer ever checks up to see where they've gone.
If they check out. So, Joanne's asked, so does this come back to something Phyllis said once, that which was waking up in the morning and giving yourself a phrase, I will have a great day, a good day?
Absolutely. There's a lot to be said for a positive early morning ritual, whether it be to say a phrase like that to yourself, or to start off with a smoothie, or to start off with a meditation, so that it becomes an habitual process. When you do something habitually on a certain pattern, it takes far less conscious effort.
Right,
So
the more you exercise, the easier it gets.
Yeah, because it becomes part of your identity. It's as hard for me to stop exercising as it would be for a smoker to stop smoking. It doesn't take any mental thought.
So that's where I say, make exercise like brushing your teeth. You just wouldn't, it's amazing. You just wouldn't leave the house without brushing your teeth, leave the house without having exercised, and which is more important?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Cheryl from Auckland said, so she's got a training partner that's not up to the same level, and so she's not getting her heart rate up to the right fat burning level. What would you suggest about that?
Was that Cheryl currently is running, walking? What kind of exercise is she doing?
Yeah, she's not saying. Cheryl, if you can type that in, that'd be fantastic. Someone else has said, I'm a frequent exerciser in that I walk and cycle, but I would like to jog. Is it too late for me to start jogging when I'm 60 years old?
No, it's not. I've had ladies in their 60s come to my training sessions, complete with handbags and all kinds of bits and pieces, and they've happily joined in the sessions and began to run. So obviously it depends on personal circumstance, on any joint issues they've got, but certainly a trainer would certainly be able to advise. And if you went to pretty much any gym, any personal trainer will be able to give you the quick once over to say, look, yeah, that's a bit okay. Or you've got a joint issue, in which case we'd recommend something else in its place. There's certainly alternatives to reduce joint impact.
Yeah, and, I just picked out a movie today. We've got a retreat coming up this weekend, Mike, with a number of our challenges and past and new. And there's a guy called Raymond Aron, I don't know if you know him, but he completed the Polar Race, which is one of the toughest races on Earth, at 62 years old. So, I think we truly are limited by what we believe we're capable of doing. Cheryl said that that question about her training partner and the heart rate, she's a walker.
Okay.
She's walking.
So what I'd recommend in that case, if her partner's heart rate, if her partner is holding her back because she's walking too slowly, then what Cheryl can do is put a rucksack on her back, a backpack, with, say, two or three water bottles, so that she's got a little bit more weight to carry, so that she's got a slightly heavier load. So her heart rate will go up slightly because of that. And then each time she goes out, she adjusts the weight slightly. So, for example, when I'm walking with my clients, I have a local boot camp for my neighbours, and when we do the hill sessions or the walking sessions, I'll perhaps carry maybe 20 kilograms on my back, where some people carry 10, some 5, and some nothing. But we're all walking at the same pace, but we're all breathing at the same kind of intensity and hardness.
Great idea. Joanne said, so is there truth to doing something X amount of times creates a routine? And if so, how long is the X amount of time?
Okay. It depends on the individual. People would say that once people have exercised for 6 months, they'll exercise for the rest of their life statistically. 6 months seems a long time for some people to get the habit. Now, that's saying that most people, that would definitely apply. For some people, we'd say that sort of 30 days of a routine is enough. But to create a habit, it all depends on the person. And the main factor is how consistent are they? Because if you do something for 2 days and miss a day, and 2 days and miss a day, that's not going to be as effective as doing it for 5 days straight. So it's that consistency in the habit. So even if you don't go to, say, for example, you're building the habit of exercise, if you do 5 days a week and take 2 days off, that's going to be a harder path than doing 7 days straight. That doesn't mean every day has to be a tough session. What we'd recommend is that you do have some tougher sessions in there. But even on your day off, you still get up at the same time, you still put your training shoes on, and you just go for a stroll. It leaves it in your mind that you are an exerciser and it's something you do every day.
That's fantastic, because Ray, who is the person that we use for 112ers, he does believe that you should be moving every day, and not every day has to be a hard day, but we are designed to move, and just having days off, because what happens, people pick this day off and it actually ends up to be another day and another day and another day, and before they know it, they've only 2 days out of 7. Yep.
So what we want is good solid days, and then we want easy days, but those easy days, we don't actually have a day off as such. It's just a case of a nice, more relaxing day, that's all.
Cheryl said thanks about the suggestion with your walking buddy, so that's good.
Oh, great.
Danny said,
you.
Is it bad to train 6 days in a row at high intensity? Is there more chance of falling off the rails if you do this?
Absolutely. So, for example, even if you're training to do an Ironman competition and you're at a national level, they would recommend that you'd only go full out hard about one every eight sessions. One every eight.
Right.
To go to the absolute maximum. But the others are somewhere between, obviously, the minimum, medium, and going up to sort of tough. Because when you train hard, obviously, there are some issues obviously which will occur with the body. So, and if your enjoyment level is suffering because of the intensity, you may be getting the physical result, but the long-term result is that you won't like to exercise. And it's more important that you enjoy your exercise, so it's a longevity thing versus a short-term thing.
Mm.
So you have to temper the enjoyment with the actual result.
Yeah. So, and the thing is that this program is actually aimed for lifelong change, so we want you to actually have enjoyment. No point in doing something if you're not enjoying yourself, because you're not going to keep doing it. So, life is too short. And the reason, most of you joined this program was to get the weight loss, but it was really about how you're going to feel when the weight's off. And in our minds, we think we're going to feel absolutely awesome, which most of us do when we lose our weight. So we're aiming for enjoyment. So, if it doesn't feel good,
When people join Get Me Fit, we express them the most important factor is that they enjoy the training session. They should get to an end of a training session having enjoyed it, because that will give them the incentive to come back and do another one. Whereas if they get to the end of saying, great session physically, but I feel absolutely, I wanted to throw up or I didn't like that, then that's not the best place to be. So it's about enjoyment, number one.
Yeah. Somebody's asked, when you're using the heart rate monitor, so all of our 112ers get a heart rate monitor, and we talk about calorie burn rather than calorie consumption. So she's asking, is it more beneficial to be in the zone for fat burning or to burn more calories?
There's arguments for and against. My preference is for a variety of training, not to get hooked on one particular discipline and not to be so identity to be within a slightly above or slightly below. I think that provided you're getting out there and training, and you may have an easy day one day in terms of a lower pace and then a higher day another day, but you enjoy both, mm-hmm. that is more important mm-hmm. than thinking, am I measuring by the... And obviously that works for some people.
Yeah.
But very few that I've come across personally. I think as long as they enjoy it and get out there, it's that consistent getting out there and enjoying it that's going to make the difference.
Yeah. Jenny said thanks for answering her question before as well. So just actually Jo had a question, Joanne, and I missed it. Where are you, Joanne? Here. So her question is, my question will be how to persevere with running. I get to 2 kilometres and need to move up to 3, and I need to move up to 3, but find I cannot get around it. I think I get bored. I'm covering the treadmill screen, change my music, etc., and my trainer says it's all in my head.
Okay. I would tend to say that it is probably in the head, and that's fine because we have got full control over what happens in our head. So that's all good. In terms of being on a running machine, I've obviously have run on a running machine, but it's not something that I would habitually do. I would tend to run outside with a partner because then you've got the conversation, natural conversation, you've got different scenery. And for me, sometimes I go out in a new place for maybe a 4-kilometer run or something, but end up running maybe mm-hmm. 30, 40 Ks just because it's on an adventure in somewhere I've never been before. Because for me, it's the exploration of somewhere new that makes my running interesting. So it might be that's a tactic you could use if it were okay for you to run outside of a gym and just explore some areas with friends. If you have to run in the gym because that's your only option, then having some music that you particularly like to listen to. So it might be that you have some trigger music that really inspires you and you set, say, for example, you want to run 3Ks, that's going to, say, take you 18 minutes, say, then you want at least 18 minutes of good music that perhaps you have some recorded audio of yourself between each song just saying, to give you that pep talk, saying just 3 minutes to go, just 2 minutes to go, or whatever that is, so that you are inspired to stay to the end and it's yourself giving you the instructions.
That's great. I use one, mic where I say anyone can do anything for however long it is. Anyone can do anything for... And I break it down like that. So if I really want to just keep going a bit longer, I might say anyone can do anything for, if I'm doing an interval where I'm going hard for 8 seconds and easy for 12 or, you know, something like that, I'll go, anyone can do anything for 12, anyone can do anything for 12. So it just keeps me going. Joanne has asked, what are your thoughts on hypnotherapy to help alter the mindset?
Absolutely. Hypnotherapy is very akin to NLP in terms of the ability to change mindset. It's very easy to install different behavioural strategies, a behaviour of running versus a behaviour of smoking or vice versa. So I'd certainly recommend hypnotherapy. I know people have had very good results with hypnotherapy. It's all choosing the practitioner that you go to because there are many people practising hypnotherapy. So I think a personal referral is by far the best thing you could do. And not just about the hypnotherapist, but about one that's done your particular thing. So if it's running, you want a referral of somebody who's had running hypnotherapy off that hypnotherapist, because every modality is different, and one hypnotherapist may be good at helping people quit smoking, and another one very good at helping people run, but they may not be good at both.
Okay, great. Just letting everybody know that I'm actually looking at training next year. Mike did such a good job with me on the weekend.
Okay.
It takes a lot for me to decide to do, you know, add some more stuff to my toolbox, I suppose. And, I was suitably impressed. So, I'm seriously thinking about doing some training next year. The other thing, too, is Mike does do courses in the same course offered in other cities and sometimes other countries. So we will get that out to you if anybody is interested. Right, so somebody said, my sister has always tried to sabotage any weight loss I have ever attempted. How can I best deal with this without offending her?
Okay, so can I just check her answer to that? So her sister's been sabotaging her weight loss.
If you want to say what sort of things, but I can imagine most of us have been on the receiving end of somebody trying to get you just to eat one more thing or just try this, it won't hurt. I would imagine that it's that sort of stuff.
Yeah. The first thing is that she's probably not doing it deliberately, and we will do almost anything to keep in rapport with people, to have that love and affection, especially with a sibling like a sister. And she doesn't necessarily want to hold you back, but she feels that she may be losing you. If you're changing your identity into somebody who exercises and she perhaps doesn't, she may just be trying to hold you close as a friend. And it may be that you just need to find another way to remind her that even if you're fit and healthy, you're still very much a loving sibling, and showing that you still care. And making it clear that you're no longer desire to eat those particular foods that she's offering, but it doesn't mean that you don't love her. So it's separating the love from the food, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be, I think, like I've seen, is that if you change, people then have, you know, they look at themselves and think, does this mean I have to change? And it, you know, starts to get them uncomfortable about this. So,
absolutely.
You know, wanting
and
you to
stay
where you are.
And we don't want to judge people or help them think that they're wrong. Certainly I've had people... Certainly I've had people that I've worked with in the past whereby they came to me eating, say, two portions of cake a day from a cafe, and that would be the regular habit. And when I got, you know, curious about why they would be designed to eat so much, they realized that it was the relationship they had with their mother, was that she didn't give them much affection, but the only way she showed her affection was by baking cakes for them when they were children. And so in order to get that sense of love to her, that was eating cake. And we did a process that took about 20 minutes once we worked out that was the challenge, so that by saying no to cake, it actually showed self-love for herself. So we changed the whole thing around, so the opposite meaning meant love, so that she therefore could quite happily turn down cake because that was showing self-love.
And, you know, that is such a critical point. Now, you actually said that on the weekend, and I just got it on a goosebumpy level then.
Yeah.
So what often will happen is if the person is actually, you know, you've got this thing tied to the love of somebody, you can sometimes end up starting to push that person away because you don't want to keep doing it, when actually if you do it, you know, embrace it the way that Mike said, you actually can retain the love for the person, but self-love yourself by not having it. Bonjour has just said, you've just made me cry, Mike, you've hit the nail on the head, thank you very much. You said they've been trying to give me my favourite things. And someone else has said, a different moment, but they said their thing that they say, you know, over and over to get them to keep going a bit longer, is they say, I gave birth, I can get up this hill.
Okay.
So that's quite cute. Okay, let's see what else. Sandy, your question is actually a nutrition one. Nothing wrong with asking it, but just remember tonight's mindset and exercise. And I'm going to say, without even checking in with Damien, the answer to your question is a no. So, Sandy, you'll know what I'm talking about. You don't need it. Please, you don't need it, honestly.
I do nutrition as well, so I'm happy to, if it's something that you
would
like to do.
Well, the answer is no. She wants to know if she can have the odd glass of Frosty. We're trying to get rid of, you know, drinking these junky drinks. So, water. Great.
Water is my drink of choice. I probably drink more water than anything else myself.
Sandy, if you want to drink it, just means that you're going to, you know, you're going to create all sorts of things that happen that make you want to have, you know, increases your desire for other things. So just try and stick to what you can for the 16 weeks. There's a challenge for 16 weeks. By the time you get to the end of 16 weeks, drinking things like that shouldn't be an issue. But if you know, please bring it up with Damien next week. Bea from Newcastle, my gorgeous, gorgeous friend, has asked, is it okay to walk, for example, and then every 10 minutes do push-ups, sit-ups, squats, lunges, and tricep dips?
Absolutely. So any strength-based training, in addition to walking, is ideal. When we do strength-based training, that obviously builds muscle mass, and that in itself consumes calories, even while we're sleeping the muscles. So any strength-based training, awesome.
Great. Remembering, guys, though, you know, if there's large amounts of weight to move, you know, it's great to focus on that cardio, you know. Don't replace all of the cardio with strength stuff when you've got, larger amounts of weight to lose. Now, Sandy, I hope you didn't feel like I was growling or anything then, but I'm just saying there are some things I just have to say a definite no to. Somebody who doesn't want their name read out has said, well, that is very cool. We have a friend that always puts the cake down when we arrive. Saying no to cake is self-love. Thank you. It's actually a really cool way of thinking about it. Joanne said, I had to exercise in front of a mirror yesterday, which was a huge eye-opener. I would suggest others try it. It's amazing how you can then change your posture, and I found it made me work harder as I was watching the wobbly bits and wanting them to disappear.
Okay, yeah.
So if that works for you, that's fantastic. I personally, Joanne, really struggled with being in front of the mirrors in the gym. It made me really uncomfortable and I couldn't relax because all I felt like was I was staring, looking at myself all the time, and I wasn't, you know, at the beginning of my weight loss journey, I wasn't in a place that I actually really felt like watching myself. But if it works, then do it. Somebody
can I add a comment on that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, with regards to when we're looking at the wobbly bits and wanting them to disappear, if I could reframe that, sometimes rather than watching the wobbly bits waiting for them to disappear, it's waiting for the athlete to appear outside of you. So just changing the mindset to seeing yourself as the athlete within and expecting that to come out.
That's fantastic. Do you want to just say that again?
So rather than waiting, when you look at yourself in the mirror and you're looking at the wobbly bits, waiting for them to disappear and just hoping for them to disappear, instead of waiting for that and hoping for that, just imagine yourself as the athlete that's already within you. You just can't see it at the moment, and expecting and waiting for the arrival of that athletic body.
Yeah. Right.
It's reframing it from a negative connotation to positive.
Yeah, that's so true. One of our challenges when we sometimes turn people down for the challenge, Mike, when they're not quite ready for it, for various reasons. And we had a challenger who was turned down, and in the next challenge she came to it. And the really cool thing about where her mind was, once she'd, you know, got partway through the second time, was that she said, you know, I know, you know, deep inside that I'm already slim. It's just that my body's now catching up.
Yeah, and that's exactly the mindset I'm talking about, because that mindset will take somebody all the way through the program with ease.
Yeah. Somebody has said, where am I? Margaret. Margaret's saying, should I wear my heart rate monitor all day or just been exercising? Margaret, what we encourage you to do, because I know that you're a new person and you're just starting, we do encourage you to put your heart rate monitor on for, you know, first couple of days, because it actually, and turn it on so that you can see how many calories you burn in a day. And often that's enough to wake people up to how little we're often actually moving in a day. If I wear my heart rate monitor when I'm actually just in the office for the day, I'm lucky to burn 900 to 1,000 calories in a day. And that's certainly not going to support me in weight loss. So it's a choice thing. You can either wear it all day if you want to, because some people like Alison, who's on the call, when she's in the weight loss mode, she'll wear hers all day, and she has a certain amount of calories that she wants to get to before she goes to bed at night. So it means that she knows that she's been really, really active, makes her more conscious of the food that she's eating. So that really works. And now I personally, when I'm on a weight loss, when I'm moving kilos, that's what I do. And some people just find them too uncomfortable and they'll just wear them for their exercise session. So it's up to you. What do you say about that, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's a great awareness tool to put it on first thing in the morning and take it off last thing at night, so that you've got an idea of what you've consumed and used in the day. If you do that for the first two or three days, you've got an average. And then perhaps every, say, 3 or 4 weeks in the program, put it on for a day, complete day, so you can see how you're over time, that as you get fitter and stronger, that it's changing.
Yeah. Joanne said, this is brilliant, tomorrow's session I will not see wobbles, I will see an athlete. Annette from Greymouth said, have you seen the photos of Dr. Oh, I always pronounce his name wrong, Emotus, is it water crystals influenced by emotions? You want to bring
them
large gratitude crystals. Also wear 60-70% water. And we actually do a little, Damien does a little session on the retreat about this, and we may actually do a call about it. There was actually somebody on the weekend who was attending Mike's session, who I had talked about getting on, and his big passion is water, and what he doesn't know about water really isn't worth knowing, I suppose. So somebody has asked, how can we learn to understand what our subconscious mind is saying that keeps sabotaging our good eating plans? So obviously it is saying something to us.
Okay. Well, we know what our subconscious mind is wanting, because that's what actually happens. Okay. That's the part that generally overrides our decisions. So we decide to eat well, but then the unconscious habitually will follow the pattern we've done in the past and we eat badly. So the trick is here to realize that we've got more than one mind, and sometimes when we go to get a food, we'll often have a little voice that says, you shouldn't be eating that, or let's only eat half that. The thing is that most of us will, at the time we want it, we're so emotionally driven to have that food that we just silence that voice or push it aside. Whereas when you actually listen to that voice, because that voice is often the voice that is advising you for the best, if you actually just listen to that voice and acknowledge it and thank it, then it will always be there to remind you when you shouldn't. And provided you're willing to listen to your inner voice, you always make the right choices around food.
Did everyone get that? Can you type in if you didn't get repeated or that was fine and we can move on to the next one, just because it was actually a really important, it was an important piece. Okay, I'm just going to refresh and see if anybody needs it repeated. Okay, yeah, no, that's all good. Margaret has said, Margaret's question was about whether to wear the heart rate monitor all day or just for it. And so she said, thanks for the answer, but can you tell me the optimal calorie number that should be each day? Margaret, it actually depends on your weight as you are now, your lifestyle. And Ray actually has a little software piece on his website that you can actually put in all of those details and they'll actually tell you what you need to aim for if you're aiming for weight loss. So I'll send that link out. Have you got anything to say about that, Mike?
Often some in terms of the heart rate, you obviously got an idea of what you're eating. So a woman's typically eating, I say, about 1,700 calories. So you want to be burning more than that. And obviously, you've got to bear in mind that whilst you're sleeping, you'll still be burning some calories. So when you put the heart rate on first thing in the morning to last thing at night, it's actually a little bit more that you're actually burning in total. But the main thing is, if you're getting out there and doing, you know, an hour's exercise as well every day, you ought to be burning in excess of what you're eating for sure. Yeah, provided you've obviously moderated your diet.
Yeah. The thing is, because we don't calorie count on this program, they can't use it as a measure because we don't want to encourage that because this is a lifestyle and you don't go through your life of counting the calories. So the calorie burn, I mean, you will work it out. If you are actually recording what your calorie burn is over a week, so, you know, for me, when I was wanting to lose, I was actually burning 3,200 calories a day. Now, that's quite high for some people and lower for others. But I had worked out what, you know, how much weight I actually wanted to lose. So I wouldn't get too hung up on the numbers. If you just do what you're supposed to do, eat the way that you are, you know, make sure you get a good 500 calorie session at least once a day and maybe, you know, some other movement and the scales are going in the right way and you're feeling great, it's actually good. Don't get too hung up. Look at those if you're finding that, it's not working. Lance has said, how do I get into an exercise routine when working shift work involving 2 day shifts and then 3 night shifts in a 5 day period?
That's a
challenge. I'd say routine.
But the challenge we have, I've with my program in Christchurch here, I've got 4 or 5 doctors and they all are working some strange shifts. And some of them will literally do a night shift and then come to a session in the morning at the end of the night shift before actually going home to go to bed. How they manage that after a full night's work, personally, I don't know how they do that, but that's what works for them. I've never done that kind of shift pattern, but there are going to be rhythms when it's best for you to train. And obviously the rhythms that you have are continually changing because of the shift work that you do. So for me, when I rise, doing my exercise then would be right. So if you're rising, even if you're sleeping during the day, when you rise, that would probably be the best time to do the exercise from my perspective. Okay. But again, I'm not speaking from experience on that one, so I can't be that helpful, I'm afraid.
Okay. So, Lance, let me know if that was enough for your idea. I think it's something that you would have to play around with, Lance, because you know you best. And I think, again, it's this whole talking thing too. You've got to be careful that the shift work doesn't become the thing that you can use as an excuse for not exercising.
Absolutely. There's no excuse ever not to exercise because the body was designed to exercise. And even if you build it into your work period, if you can, because there are some forms of exercise that you could do along the workplace.
True. Joanne's asked, how do you make yourself more aware? I will often binge on a bad food choice, and after I have inhaled, my inner voice shows up. And when she's saying inhaling, it means it's been wolfed down without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Chances are I would have ignored it anyway, But I feel my brain kicks in after my mouth. And then she said, "Pierre, sorry about a zillion questions. Joanne, we love questions because if you're thinking it's someone else's, so please, nobody ever should apologise for feeling like they're asking lots of questions. Don't forget I'm reading them and I choose to, you know, pick them out. So keep asking."
Yeah, great question. So a recap to make sure I've got the question correct. So she sees the food she wants. She has the emotional desire to eat it. Even if she hears a voice saying, "Don't eat it," she's like, she's wolfed it down and it's gone before she's then feels guilty about it afterwards.
And she also feels that her brain doesn't kick until after the food's consumed. So what she's saying is she thinks even if she heard it before, which she's not, she wouldn't listen to it anyway, but she wants to know why does it kick in after she's consumed it, so she can't do anything about it.
Okay. So it's basically a self-protection mechanism that why it kicks in afterwards, if that's the case. So that it's a sort of a self-denial thing, but it's a sort of protecting her decision to eat. How would you get around that? I have to think for 2 seconds on that one. I'm thinking back to when I was probably about 10 years ago. I used to eat pretty badly back then. I'd go shopping and I'd be eating the donuts going around the supermarket. I'd be driving home with a box of cakes and I'd cross those before I got home, and then I wouldn't be hungry enough to actually cook myself a dinner. So what did I do? I guess the first thing I did was I looked at what I did and I realized that I didn't love the version of me that did that. And I realized that by allowing myself to do that, that was almost disrespecting myself. And when I got present to the fact that that wasn't the kind of person that I wanted to be and to be an example to others, that I realized that I had to change. And when we're changing for ourselves, sometimes that's quite challenging. But when we're changing for somebody else, to set an example to somebody else, then that becomes more empowering. So say, for example, I don't know if this particular lady, but if she had a daughter, for example.
She does have a daughter.
Okay, so for the daughter. If she knew that a daughter was aware of the fact that her mother could do this to herself and that she was setting that example, that would almost empower the mother to go, actually, I don't want my daughter to go to this. And it's easier for her to stop doing it for a daughter than it is to stop doing it for herself.
So, Joanne, did that make sense, Joanna? Joanne, I was called Joanna. Did that make sense? Let me know. Just type in Judith. Your question. You said you wore your heart monitor. You had your heart rate monitor on when you were feeling. When you weren't feeling well, lightheaded, and your heart rate was 47. Because you're on heart medication, Judith, you can't go by what the heart rate monitor says. You said, but I'm wondering if I'm feeling woozy due to my heart med not being changed since I first had heart failure 3 years ago, in which I was 15 kilos heavier. Could it be strong now, making me feel off? You really need to go and talk to your specialist about that. And if you could send that by email tomorrow, I need to send that to Damien just so that, you know, he's in the loop of what's happening with you. So you go up the
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, the phone's gone dead here, I think.
Hello?
Hello, should I dial back in? I'll dial back in because the phone's gone dead here.
See you?
I can hear you.
Oh, I can hear you. Oh, you just came in then? Hello? Shall I dial back in?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear as well. I'm just not sure what's happening to...
I can hear you again
now. Oh, great. I think it just went funny. Yeah. It was actually... Oh, see, we've all gone funny. It was actually me that went funny. You were fine. Everyone else could hear you except for me. I don't know what that was. With that question, I think that we, you know, really need you to send that in and make sure that you have got... you know, some answers from your own specialist. Okay, so everyone can hear me again. They're just letting me know that I'm back online. Mike, are you okay? You're there?
I'm here, yeah. I'm here now.
Okay, great. Someone else said, thanks for asking that, Joanne. That resonates with me too. Don't want my daughter to go through what I've done for myself. Just making sure that everyone got that answer. Yeah. So, Joanne, are you happy with that? Yeah. She said, yes, that makes sense and a brilliant idea. I need to think, what would I let my daughter eat? Would I let my daughter eat this before I go for it? I just need to slow down and take the time to think. So that's great.
Cool.
Cara has said, and I've got to be careful because we're coming up to the end of the hour, guys, and I know there's 50 billion questions and obviously everyone's really enjoying it. Cara said, I was wondering if you could help me. I've analysed my eating habits and have come to a conclusion that because as a child I always felt hungry, and when I became responsible for myself, I ate whatever, whenever. How can I change this with a new mindset so that I'm more balanced in my habits?
Mm. So she's eating whatever, whenever. Hmm.
Yep, because she couldn't in the past.
Okay, so in the past was a scarcity of food that she was only allowed to eat at certain times. So now she's got like a scarcity mentality. So whenever there's food there, she'll have it.
Yeah, could you put in that that's actually correct? I'm just going to do Donna's question while we wait for that. Donna said. She said her question is that she runs 45 to 60 minutes most days and does the gym and a spin class once a week. Do I need to increase this and by how much? It depends what your goal is, Donna. And what would you say, Mike?
Well, it seems like she's got a good, hours exercise there every single day. And that's absolutely great. And for an average person in society, spot on. An hour a day would be ideal. If you've got a considerable amount of weight to lose, then you do actually need to do more, for sure. And not as necessarily as intense, but another half an hour to an hour of gentle exercise on top of that would be fantastic to burn off those calories. But for the average person, and if you're enjoying what you're doing, that's fine. Unless, of course, you want to move into competition style. But some people I work with train 4 or 5 hours a day, but that's not right for the average person in society typically. I myself only train an hour a day, for example.
Yeah. And again, it depends what your purpose is, Donna. So if, there is some other goal, don't do it just for the sake of doing it. Do it because, either you're really enjoying it and you've got that free time, or it's going to help you with your weight loss, et cetera. Cheryl, this is a lovely example, Mike, of language.
Okay.
So she said, I've had a fantastic weight loss this week, and I know from past experience that when that starts to drop, so will my enthusiasm. How do I combat this?
Okay, cool. That's easy.
Yeah.
So it's basically a goal setting issue, that one, because when you lose the weight, the pain of being overweight reduces, and therefore your desire to exercise goes down. So that means that she's doing the weight loss doing the good nutrition and the exercise to avoid being overweight. So whenever that challenge goes away, then the desire to exercise goes down. What we need to do is set a positive goal that she's inspired to be either athletic or to be a certain weight or to have something to perhaps go into a competition, so that no matter how much the weight comes down, she's still inspired to go forward. We'd call this sequential incongruity. Time after time, she's got going one step forward, one step back, one step forward, one step back, and that's a classic symptom of negative motivation in terms of moving away from a goal. And we just want to set a goal that's more positive, that she actually wants to be athletic or wants to do a particular race or competition or,
Right. That's an interesting one too, because there's actually two when we're, as all the challengers know, when we're actually interviewing them, talking to them about why they're going to want to do the 112 and going through the program with them, there are two things that we do ask them to, when they enter the program, actually really desire to do and commit to, and that's to, one is to lose all of their weight this time, not to do this 10 kilos and then leave an unfinished journey.
Yeah.
And also to make this the last weight loss thing that they turn up for. So we don't want to be added to a list of things that they've done. Cara's come back.
I agree with both of those. Can I make one suggestion?
Yeah, sure.
And that is just the word lose, because we've never wanted to lose anything in our lives, our car keys, our wallet, money, our phone numbers. But when we talk about weight, that's the only thing in the world that we actually want to lose. And so there's a negative connotation in the brain there that we're actually losing part of ourselves. And that could set up some languaging in the brain, which isn't quite helpful. So rather than want to lose 10 kg, if they're 80, say, for example, then actually the goal would be, I want to be 70.
Yeah.
it's positively driven?
We have conversations about this quite often because we, you know, we're all highly aware about the using lose, and I think it is an ingrained habit to talk about weight loss, to lose weight.
Yeah.
So, you know, we try to talk about releasing it and, you know, those sorts of things. Now, somebody had just, Caro said that there wasn't, it was because there wasn't actually enough food to go around when she was younger.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so sometimes in our behaviours, they're set up between the ages of sort of 0 and 6, we go through an imprint period in our development, and sometimes we don't question the programming as it goes in, and so you may have been in sort of an imprint period at that time when that was done. So that's would account for why the behaviour would be that when you now have food available that you do need to gorge on it or eat on it. But that can be changed. And it's mainly around deciding that, sort of revisiting that in an imagination kind of sense, to seeing yourself as that young child when, even if you were somewhat older, seeing yourself at that time and almost like an angel, if you like, looking down at yourself at that 6-year-old, that 7-year-old, that was when you made that decision to eat in this way, that when there was food you would eat. And now in your adult self, with the learnings that you have, sort of get a sense of, what was there to be learned at that time? And it wasn't to overeat whenever there was food. It was to be about being respectful of food, making sure that you had enough, but not overeating, you know, and taking some positive learnings from that point. Because it seems like an imaginary journey, but sometimes that's all that's required to change the decision you made back then into a more empowering decision today.
Mm.
And an NLP instructor could take you through that in about 20 minutes to guide you through that meditation. But certainly those are meditations, that kind of thing, works very well, changing that programming.
So we've gone over time, so I'm going to just wrap the call up, guys. Donna said thanks. Thank you for that. That helped. She said it's weight loss versus then competition. And Nicholas said thanks for asking that. I lost 3.5 kilos this week, and because it's her first week, there'll be fluid in there. And now I've got it in my head that next week won't be as good. Like, I'm setting myself up already for failure. My mind is nuts. Again, some change of language there, but you know, people are getting it. Joanna said, "Awesome call, thanks very much." So, if anyone's got any last words they want to say to Mike, I can't ask any more questions because it is 9:30 and you know, taking up precious time of Mike. So, thank you very much for this, Mike. I know that people would have got a huge amount out of it. Please re-listen to this recording a couple of times this week because there'll be heaps of information that you wouldn't have heard because, you know, you would have ducked out of the learning while you were listening and come back in and missed a bit. So thank you, Mike. I have said about the Christchurch people joining you next week, and I'll send that out. And also that we're going to look at if anybody is interested in having a bit more of Mike, you know, how we offer, because she has her sessions. Mike's just looking about into a way that he could maybe do something with a number of you online. So if you are interested, let me know, and we'll get back to you when Mike's got something up and running. Any last parting words, Mike, for everybody?
Just to say this is my first time doing one of these, so I really enjoyed the experience. I loved getting all the questions from all you guys out there. And I wish you all the very best with your goals for the remainder of the challenge and beyond. Love and best wishes.
And Mike, a few people have come back and they said, thanks so much, wonderful. And yes, Phyllis, definitely need to have more time with this mindset. Thank you both. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mike. That was great. Thanks for an awesome session. Bex has said, thanks so much for speaking to us tonight. Awesome call, brilliant information. So everybody's totally enjoyed it. And I know, definitely interested. Great session, Phyllis and Mike. So I think you'll be hearing from me. Mike, we'll have to get something organised. So thanks very much, Mike. And
you're welcome.
I'll talk to you again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Okay.
Bye. Bye, everybody.